Why boring and awful? Just grand?
Well, not grand, no. Just very interesting. Very interesting. I did not show this. Chances about recordings. Music, no interest in music. Nothing to talk about yet, no. Personality, except it's quick, sharp, sort of smart.
Yes.
Might have been, I don't know what, executive of some sort.
Yes.
Oh, yes. Dashing about making, I don't know, contacts in business.
Yes.
More like that.
Yes.
Artistically, nothing at all.
Yes.
Or seemed nothing to me.
Yes.
I wasn't know that. Yet towards the end of his life, particularly, he did produce some stunning performances.
Mm.
Mainly of post-1850 music.
Yes.
Not Beethoven, so at the moment.
What did you think of the Wagner?
What?
Of Karajan's Wagner.
I don't think I heard it.
Mm.
I don't think I ever heard it.
Mm.
I only heard The Ring, for example. I never heard him conduct like that.
Mm.
He didn't do it at Salzburg, which I went.
Mm.
He wasn't a Bayreuth when he was there.
Yes.
After the war. He didn't come to London to do it.
Mm.
Came to me, he's got an honorary degree at Oxford, which is a scandal.
Oh, really?
Scandal.
Did you interpose your voice against it?
No, I wasn't consulted.
Mm.
It was done by counsel.
Yeah.
And I just saw it in the newspaper.
Yeah.
However, he didn't come to lunch. It also was because he flew off in his jet, which is for himself, he took his degree, appeared and then flew away. But then he came to give a concert. I was fortunate in America, wasn't it? So nothing arose.
Yeah, yeah. Well, tell me about your impression.
His wife I knew, his first and second wife.
Mm-hmm.
I must tell you several things before we begin.
Yeah.
First of all, the story about his first wife, the musical.
Who was made the honorary Aryan by Goering.
Well, I know, he's very pretty,
yeah.
Blue-eyed, fair-haired,
mm-hmm.
Nothing Jewish about appearance.
Mm-hmm.
But she talked to her being in Paris during the war.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't think entirely. And knowing a lot of white Russians and perhaps they knew, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Did I know, oh, some of Walensky or other, or some,
yeah.
Not only somebody. I think I don't know Walensky or Algoruk or somebody.
Yeah.
Anyhow, and she went about with it.
Yeah.
So I realized it wasn't quite Kosher, but I knew he was in Germany, Austria during the war.
Yes.
Couldn't, I knew that he was
that
we washed.
Yes.
That he's a then, what is that? Then I went to Bern in 1950 to stay with Dr. Weizmann, who was having his eyes looked at.
Mm.
He was then president of Israel. I met Frau von Karajan on the street. She was enormously affable, couldn't be. Months on, I talked to her, and she said, what are you doing? And I said, I'm staying with her. Oh, there's no man in the world I'd like to be more. I realized later that obviously was a washed in some way, rather useful.
Yes, yeah.
In the future career, but anyhow. So I said, what are you doing? He's really ill, and his eyes and so on. Anyhow, what are you doing today, tomorrow? I said, well, the thing I most want to do is to go to Lucerne, Lipati,
oh, okay.
Who is a marvelous pianist,
yes,
I died young and early.
Dino Lipati.
She said, well, she said, Herbert is conducting. I think I can do something. I was given a chair on the stage behind the curtain somewhere. They really was sold out.
Yeah.
Many times over. Karajan conducted, I don't know what, Tchaikovsky's Fifth Symphony. And then we had a Mozart concerto. Which was divine.
He was an absolutely amazing pianist.
Lipati was a wonderful pianist.
Yeah.
He was.
Yeah.
And then I realized, and she said, would I have a drink now? I realized what was wanted was the introduction to Weizmann.
Mm.
I didn't do it, and I felt guilt ever since. I wasn't going to take a Nazi to see Weizmann and be damaged.
Yeah.
Why should I compromise?
Yeah.
So,
but you just—you should put that. But you should put that down to war reparations, surely.
Well, yes, we have to. Yes. Well, he divorced her in the end.
Yeah.
Married a very boring little French wife called Juliette.
Hmm.
Who I used to see in Salzburg, used to come up to me.
Yeah.
I was introduced by Bob Silvers, the lady.
Yeah.
And she said, "Oh, Herbert, I'm so glad to see you. He's always talking about you. You come to London, etc." I am a lawyer, always.
Yes.
That's my relation with the lady from Carrier.
Let me ask you about the concert on Monday night. I found it very touching occasion. I'm just wondering what your impressions were of the whole experience.
I thought it was marvelous. First of all, the musicians were of top order.
Hmm.
Such as never happened before. I don't think they ever played together.
Yes, it was
they
incredible.
But I've never known.
Yes.
I mean, what's been played with the same concert as Holliger, yes.
Yes.
In Hohenems. Mm. I think it happened. Mm. And I think that Fischer Discount, he then did the Winterreise.
Yes.
There was never a combination.
Of all, yes.
No,
all
no, no.
Four of them.
And Verdi was not part of it.
Yes. Yeah.
First of all, I thought they were superb, beyond praise.
Mm.
Secondly, they were all nice people and got on very well with each other, with me.
Yes.
And so the atmosphere was not as it would be with Shostakovich or Shostakovich or Stern. There wasn't any showmanship at all.
Yes.
No glossy.
Yes.
No heavy jokes, no loud laughter.
Yes.
You know what I mean? And I thought the concert was beyond words marks.
Mm.
However, Rainier told me on telephone that Alfred is rather displeased by the rather nasty reviews he got.
Oh, really?
Particularly in Telegraph, I didn't see it.
Oh, really?
Times wasn't nice either.
Mm.
Times didn't talk about me, said, well done, my honor, the wonderful. Mm. As I was in favor of pluralism and modern music, apparently, something should surely be done to illustrate my taste rather more. Then it's sort of Boulez, Fernia, you see.
Little Messiaen to really make you feel great.
But they thought Mozart was safe.
Yes.
And that's why they played Mozart.
Yeah.
He then said, well, they all said Holliger was marvelous.
He was absolutely extraordinary. Sure. Yeah.
Lord Wilberforce said to me, it's like snake drama.
No.
I didn't think so.
No, no. Sue got it right. She said to me, he's just like a little boy with a flute, is what he is.
Exactly.
He had a kind of infinite,
the excitement
kind of
was enormous,
tiny kind of,
marvelous.
You know, wonderful.
No,
very
totally,
Papageno
totally
kind
devoted,
of.
Yes. Totally devoted to it.
Yes. And I was very touched by Dieskau in a way, standing up there, putting his great feet out there and kind of...
Oh yes, and she didn't use that absolute full voice. That was only down at the terrible moment.
Oh, I loved that. I thought that was...
Oh, to happy birthday to me.
Yes, I thought that was delightful.
I was not at the table, fortunately. I was hiding. I was having my... I went to get my food.
Yes.
I managed to hide. Some told me, and nobody saw me.
Oh, but I thought it was one of the... I thought that was terribly nice. What I liked about the occasion...
I see, thought you wanted. It came out. The end was terrifically.
Yes.
Unbelievable.
Yes. She was very good fun.
Ta-ra-ram, bum, too. Oh, she was fun, yes.
Yes.
And pretty, too.
Yes, yes.
I thought.
I thought what I liked about the evening is that it didn't sink under its own grandeur.
When I
and it was very amusing to see Lord Weinstock and Mr. Sainsbury queuing up for their
meal.
It was rather good.
When I told her that I wasn't upset about Karajan's death to Verdi, she embraced me.
Excellent.
That I enjoyed.
Excellent. How is it, getting back to biographical questions, that such an event is arranged for you? It was absolutely astonishing.
I'll tell you what happened. The idea was that of Mrs. Gerson.
Mm-hmm.
She thought of it.
Oh, really?
And suggested it to him.
Mm-hmm.
He thought of it as something who might make money as well.
Mm-hmm.
For whatever it calls, electronic music, whatever you're collecting money.
Yeah.
And that's why he wanted, he thought it was terrific ticket. Then he telephoned to Brendel, because he knew that he was a friend of mine.
Yeah.
And Brendel then said yes, took it on.
Mm-hmm.
The rest was really him. The program was arranged between Brendel and Nick Snowman, who was the executive, but I don't think Nick Snowman had much to do with it.
But they didn't consult you about programs?
No, no. No.
How did it end up being all Mozart?
They just decided it.
Hmm.
Nothing with me.
All right.
I equally preferred it to be all Schubert.
Yeah.
I mean, you see.
Yeah.
Did you
miss any Russian music?
No.
No.
I didn't think it was necessary to do it to my benefit.
Yeah.
They simply, he and, well, you see, what happened was lots of things happened. Then, of course, Minoumi, my cousin.
Yes.
Well, I mean, Alfred said he wouldn't play with him anyway.
Oh, really? Yes.
Well, he played the violin.
Yes.
Then, what about Isaac Stern, my great friend? So, of course, as Ronnie Gerson telephoned to him, he said, delighted, very pleased to do it. And Rostropovich would like to do it too. Couldn't they play a trio with Alfred?
And Alfred said no.
First of all, he couldn't prepare it, taking 2 years, for anything anyhow. The last thing in the world is to play a trio. Those two. They're not totally style.
Yeah.
So,
He and why? Because they're too exuberant, too grand,
I think too
showy.
Yeah. In some way vulgar for him.
Yeah.
The taste is too different. Yeah. And above all, Stern. Well, the first time Alfred ever stayed in Oxford, Stern telephoned me in the morning. I had no idea what the relation. I came in quite naively and said, that was Isaac Stern. And said, Alfred said, oh, that was Stern. You know, you can play very beautifully. Sometimes, even profoundly. It shows the man and the artist are not always the same.
Yes,
yes. Okay? Yes. Well, when you
say, I saw. Au
revoir. So anyhow, you became very offended, of course, Stern. You realize it'd be held up and held back. Couldn't have been Sonata without it. Well, he could have offered a solo, but he didn't. What he did was to talk to me. And then I leaned about it. The dates were difficult, still long to do it, couldn't he persuade, and so on. Then he rang me up and said, he's very sorry. His doctor told him he must take a complete month's rest in July. He couldn't go anywhere, couldn't play anywhere. All right, I fully accept it. That's so in theory, we're on perfectly good terms.
Yes.
But he was very, very, not very irritated.
What about Rostropovich?
Rostropovich couldn't manage the dates. So
yes.
He apologized to his ones. Couldn't care less.
Yes.
I mean, he might have done it or not.
Yes, but Stern
touch is very light. I don't know him as well. Stern really is a friend for many years, in Israel and everywhere.
Yes.
Zionist movement.
But do you agree with, do you recognize Brendel's characterization of Stern?
No, not really, because Stern could play marvelously.
Oh, God, yes, absolutely.
No question. He's very debatable, could tell a better name.
Yes.
And the Brahms. And Tchaikovsky, you know. I can see that Brendel wouldn't like this kind of slime little schmaltz. There was somewhere.
Yeah.
A touch of butter.
Yeah.
Does exist somewhere. Very little of it.
Yeah.
You wouldn't have wanted a high fixer. But I don't think they were playing a piano and violin. You know, they didn't hear heads. Anyway, that was very fastidious.
Yeah.
As you know. As you can guess.
God,
so exactly.
As I know.
Anyway, so these two musicians under the rock cut. And Mrs. Minogue wrote the letter congratulating me, saying, so sorry, you left me abroad. You couldn't take part in the concert. Take part in the attend, play.
Yes,
yes. So she rang up and said, well, we can't come to the concert. Curious, isn't it? All this musician should be Gentiles. She's all herself. Wonderful thing I didn't notice. I mean, would have noticed.
That seems a vulgar remark to me, if I may say.
Would have noticed that.
Yes. Yes.
Didn't occur to you, didn't occur to me, didn't occur to any human being.
Yes.
At least one Jew. What she meant was, the great Yehudi.
Yes. He's not always played abominably.
Oh, no. When he was a boy, before the war, he was divine. As a wunderkind.
Yes.
He was better than anyone.
Yes.
He played Beethoven. In 1936, 1937, 1938, it was absolutely marvelous. Oh Lord, yes. And for some time after.
Yes.
No,
well, 1960, possibly.
1960, it began to go. No, some psychological, difficult to say what it is. His hand trembles too.
Yes.
Always. And then because of guru things and all that began. May you write one of those awful letters to the Times, I didn't know if we saw it.
No.
Saying how serious it is to see the society of my beloved adopted country tearing it all to pieces, can't they will agree?
Yes,
can't
they yes, I think I do.
None of this gooey sort of letters are awful. Sort of high-minded, spiritual letters.
Yes. That kind of liberalism you have no time for. That's what gives liberalism a bad name.
It does.
Why can't we all be friends? Yeah, why can't we all agree?
No, but the style which is written is inflated. Spiritual style.
Yeah.
Sort of religious prose.
Yeah.
Well, he feels that. He's quite honest, quite genuine. I spent the morning with Nyman.
Yes.
With him, he wants to meet you.
Yes, I'm having dinner with him on Friday night.
And so he told me. I was not to tell you that he would like, I mean, I'm producing an idea of my own. He doesn't want me to act as an agent of persuader or anything.
Yes.
He wants to program with you.
Yes,
I don't know what.
Yes. Well, let's leave it till Friday night.
Extremely intelligent man.
Yes. What's the status of his relationship with Akhmatova?
It was genuine. You see, all Akhmatova's friends who live in our shadow are jealous of each other, mm. in a relation with her.
Mm.
None of them like each other.
Mm.
There's a lady called Zoya Borisovna Tomaszewska,
mm.
who is a great Rachmaninoff person, who thinks Neiman is a well, cheap little fellow, really.
Mm.
And the other man who came to see me, even though he was a bad man, straight bad man,
mm.
what's his name? Not the Hebrew son, Melach.
Mm.
Just a bad name.
Mm.
Just a very bad name. Brodsky and Neiman are friends. They say bitchy things about each other. They're jealous heirs. There's no doubt he wants to talk about Neiman.
As a student, was. As a friend, as no, a confidant?
No, as a journalist, as a writer. Tomaszewski said that he kept on asking her to introduce him, and she never would. So that I'm not introducing people to Weizmann or to Brendel. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
in the end, she had to go and see her part of Brazil. Neiman offered to drive her to the little place outside Leningrad, Komarovo, where she lived. And then she left him out because he didn't want to come. And then there was pouring rain. She had again his thought, said, I'm afraid I'm to go, but a young man lived to me, and I want to very well, and leave me for him, you can. And she found him soaking wet, because he had no clothes on, so on. So she took pity on him. And she said, well, you better come and dry yourself in some bathroom. So she took him to the airport. After that, he went on his own.
Yeah.
There's no doubt they're friends.
What kind of age is he?
He would be in his 40s, as he always are. He should be in his 40s. But I mean, he's a gifted writer. He makes money entirely by translating Provençal.
Oh, really?
Yes, certainly. He translates some troubadours.
Oh, really?
Into Russian.
Oh, really?
He had paid translations.
Oh,
he wants steady trade.
Yeah.
In Russian.
Yeah.
He's written a piece on another one. Which I've got in Madrid in TypeScript, which Merad will appear, and which Peter, my stepson, is the editor, publisher of in English.
All right, because he's going to publish the
some lady is translating it in English.
Interesting. Well, I will see him on Friday. I was very touched, to change the subject slightly, by your letter on my behalf.
Oh, that's all right.
Thank you very much.
It's brief and does what's wanted.
Absolutely. And in fact, did.
Hardy will have to deal with Hardy. Poor man, he obviously had some ambition to it himself. They never
I had
it.
An extremely friendly lunch
was
with Hardy.
A nice man.
And I thought he was very nice. I was appalled, or surprised, let's just say surprised. Surprised to discover how much of your Inéd there are. Your unpublished.
He says an enormous amount.
Yes.
I have no idea. I've never looked.
Well, he says there's 5 volumes, Isaiah. What's going on here?
I can't tell
you. Why won't you publish these things?
Because they're not good enough. Because I'm not worthy.
Really?
Well, you can look. After I'm dead, I didn't know what happens.
But you're going to let him publish, and there's another volume you will let him publish
with
the Domestic
volume. Yes, that's right. Yeah. And even Haman, maybe. Maybe Haman, there is a piece which I think is all right. I'll have to look at it in Italy. In summer, I think. Anyway, it is now. I think in Hardy's hands. But I'll
you think most of what you write is unworthy?
I'll tell you what to look at. Yes, I do. I always have.
Mm-hmm.
I've never enjoyed writing, and I've never enjoyed it. And I hate reading it. I don't feel what a genius I was in those days.
Mm.
No. Now, I'll tell you. You want to get out of Hardy, perhaps you have that piece. It's a slightly embarrassing character, which I did in
Jerusalem lecture.
You've read that?
You
have it. Haven't you?
I have it in, but I don't
Russian
know in what
English.
Version. Yes, yes.
There's these gems.
Yes.
That is the matter of autobiographical truth.
Yes, I asked him specifically what autobiographical materials he had,
nothing
and
specific.
He mentioned that and one or two other.
What are the other things?
Nothing of any great importance. He mentioned another lecture. He mentioned a childhood essay. He mentioned tapes with Pat Utekin on your childhood.
children at home, in Ibiza. And there is a man called Gabby Kearns, I tell you.
Yes. What are you going to do about Gabby Kearns?
No, he wasn't meant to come to the concert, but he's still in Israel. He says, come in the autumn, I'll tell him.
Could you tell him?
Of course.
Because I'd like to maintain very good relations with
him. Of course. He wants to write a book himself, did he?
And I'd like to make available any of my material to him.
If he needs it, yes. Yeah. Don't go too far. Mm-hmm. He's a nice man, but he's what the Russians call polo-intelligent, half-educated. Mm. He was a member of parliament for the Labour Party. Mm. The Israel parliament is a decent, high-minded man.
Yeah.
He's a professor of something or other, politics in Tel Aviv.
Yes.
He was a dean. He has written about, I don't know, Anglo, in Zionist relation with everyone else.
Yeah.
That country and so on. Yeah. But he's not really quite well. The Jewish part, I think he'll
be good on
anyone,
yes. Yeah. Well, I will need his help on that side of the story. Is it just that society?
Why, have we not done...
Oh, we've talked a lot. We've talked endlessly about Jewishness.
About Jewishness, not just about Israel.
No, we've talked endlessly about all sides of the question. I wanted to come back to one thing that occurred to me very forcibly in the concert, which is... looking at...
The only thing I tell you about Jewishness is my wife's brother, who was a very nice sort of superfluous person. He grew apples somewhere near Lyon and near Bordeaux, and wasn't a Jew. I mean, he had trouble with it.
Yeah.
Complained about it. He was a friend of mine. Complained to Eileen that I talk about nothing. Every conversation always ends something about the Jews. It's intolerable. And Eileen feels that too.
Really?
Oh, yes. I talk much more about it in the last 20 years than I ever did before.
Hmm.
I really didn't talk about it.
Why is that?
Years.
Why is that? For the same reasons that my father talks more about being Russian Orthodox.
Very possible. The point was that, yes, I don't know, I suppose the existence of Israel made a certain difference to the position of the Jews. But I've always taken as that I'm not the thing which I feel about what I like about the Jews. It's simply Farbeken, as the Germans say, determines their color. Are they ashamed of being Jews? Mm. Are they all right?
Yeah.
Are they fanatical? Mm. Are they, is there a complicated tradition with them?
Yeah.
Are the Gentiles, are they partly ashamed, partly overproud? What's going on?
Yeah.
I just rather like speaking them out.
Yeah.
Not necessarily personally, but
sort
of categorizing them.
Yeah.
German Jews awful. Russian Jews any good Jews, good Jews there are. British Jews less good. Latvian Jews like me, nothing at all. American Jews, mixed bag.
Yes. Yeah. But why is it that Jewishness has become more of a theme in your life in the last 20 years?
I think because more has been talked about it everywhere. Mm-hmm. Because the Jews become front page news. Mm. They weren't before.
So it's more problematic.
Well, that constant discuss. I mean, I've not so many years, so I react more. I constantly see things about them. Mm. And things happen to them, and there's more anti-Semitism, post-Nazi anti-Semitism, pre-anti-Semitism, Israel, they become items of front page news, in thousands of respects, more than any other group of human beings, I would say. And that natural reactions of a unconscious, of a sort of spontaneous kind.
I've
never changed my view.
Does it make you feel more Jewish in some sense, or more, does it change your view of yourself in any
way? No, it doesn't, because I've always thought of myself, I was asked what I was. When I was at Oxford in the 30s, I was so much part of the English philosophical scene there, that, and I didn't know Jew, I hardly knew Jews then.
Yeah.
Although, of course, I was one, and I used to talk to Zion and Saidi once a year, even then. But I lived my life in Italian, not among Jews. I didn't in English, but I felt Oxford.
Yes.
Felt part of the Oxford scene quite intrinsically, quite gremially.
Yes.
It's absolutely part of it. And was.
Yes.
As a result of America, I was uprooted from Oxford and began to move about in social circles.
Yes.
And generally speaking, began to live in a wider and some certainly much more corrupt world.
Yes.
And that probably made me feel more consciously what I was than I was before.
Yes.
And Oxford was just a dog.
Yes.
But as far as the Jews are concerned, I think I always knew if I was asked what I was, I would never say I was English. I would never say I was Jewish. I would never say anything except I'm a Russian Jew.
Yes.
That's how I thought of myself. That's how I was.
Mm.
That for them is unwanted.
Yes.
Yeah. That's steady.
Yeah.
But no doubt, as a result of writing to Israel and going there and meeting all these people and being asked to do things and
yeah.
being courted by them to some extent, Weizmann, yeah. who I didn't know before,
yeah.
not at all. And all of them even met him once or something, mm. and so on. As a result of no doubt, the Zionist movement to some extent sucked me in. Mm. And that naturally made one
yes,
more conscious. That's all.
Yes.
Yes. But I will say this, when I meet Russian Jews, I feel much more at home with them than Jews of any other kind.
Mm. But why?
East Europe, because there are more sort of people in Jerusalem, but because of, well, look, there's Naiman, mm-hmm. the typical one.
Yes.
I must interrupt myself and say this.
What's typical? No, you mustn't interrupt yourself. What's typical? Why?
Interest in ideas.
Mm-hmm. Garrulousness.
Spontaneity.
Yes. Warmth. Humor.
And sudden intellectualism.
Yeah.
And even without intellectualism, a sort of openness to everything. I mean, yeah. the opposite of German Jews, they're not pedantic, they're not scholarly, they're not pompous, they're not self-important.
Yeah.
Maybe some were, but not ones.
Yeah.
We take Jacobson, the famous linguist,
yeah.
who's a man of genius,
yeah.
if I'm told, in linguistics.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, he was a Russian Jew, my purposes. He made jokes, he was yeah. jolly, he was talk about anything. When I was ill at Harvard, I used to get the flu or something. He would suddenly appear in my little bedroom in Lowell House with a huge bottle of vodka and of course some salt herring.
Yeah.
La Russe.
Yeah.
Well, German Jews never did that to each other.
Yes, everybody would talk.
And with that,
yes.
it's a samovar essentially.
Yes, yes.
It's a tea party.
Yes.
Around the samovar. The spontaneity, the naturalness.
Yes.
And Jews have that in the Russians.
Yeah.
No doubt.
Mm.
They have it. Polish Jews are much more, I mean, just talkative. They're more cunning, they're
yes.
more complicated. Russian Jews on the whole are nobler. I can't help feeling that. More like, they're less corrupt.
Yes.
They're more, more related, some kind of liberal section of the Russian intelligentsia, even if they're businessmen.
Yes.
To do, those are the people in some sense thought to be the only Russians they could talk to. And therefore I may idealize them a bit.
Mm.
But even when I met them in Russia, musicians, I felt they were very sympathetic.
Yeah.
Mm. I'm sympathetic. So is Madame Tomaszewska, who's not Jewish at all.
Mm.
Maybe it's the Russian part, not
yes.
the Jewish part.
Yeah.
But the fact that Jews, somehow mean I can talk to them about Jewish matters as well,
yes.
even freer.
But then there's a slight complication introduced in this, which is that
you're actually... I did not feel that about, because he was such an anti-Semitic.
Mm.
Boston loathed being a Jew. He loathed it to a pathological degree.
Mm.
And when I used quite deliberately in 45, used the word Palestine, Jew, the retreat symptoms, the recession,
yes.
was visible.
Yes. Yes.
I didn't respect him for that. I could see he just wanted to be a Russian hero. Blonde,
yes.
blue-eyed Sadko, merchant of Novgorod.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what he wants to be.
Yeah.
The fact that Peredelkina, where they all lived, these writers,
yeah.
had once been in a state belonged to Samari,
yeah.
with a famous Slavophil,
oh, yes, yes,
Slavophil
yeah.
sort of choir, I mean,
yeah.
landowner.
Yeah, yeah.
And filled him with joy.
Oh, God. How terrible it is to me.
It was genius, I know. And he had a good genius, all right.
But you're from Riga, damn it. You're in some ways.
I know, but
you're claiming a kind of honorary affiliation.
I can't help it, but I was in Petrograd in the age of
yes,
six.
Mm. Yes, I'm not.
No, and that's
it's not an it's not
wouldn't
an accusation of fraud. It's
wouldn't
just that you're a different.
No, wouldn't have been Riga.
Yeah.
I was in Riga in until fall, but my parents are Russian.
Yes,
straightforward.
Yes. Yes.
And German too, because they're bilingual,
yes.
but not to me.
Mm.
So I didn't know.
Not
really. Not at all, really.
Mm.
But all, partly that.
Mm.
Partly life in Petrograd was a very Russian life.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
lived.
Yeah.
And I read these books, and I felt I understood everything about them.
Yeah.
And I understood everything about the 19th century. I don't understand the 20th century. When I read 19th century books, the values are plain to me.
Yes, you know what's going on.
Exactly. Yeah. 20th century, not so clear.
Not so clear.
You see? And the Russians are 19th century people. Mm. That's the period of their glory.
Mm.
1820 to 1920 is the period when we think
Russian greatness.
Yeah. And all genius. Yeah. Mm. I mean, some survived in the Soviet period. There's no comparison.
Yes, well, you're not going to get a loud disagreement from me on that score.
But about the truth, yes. Well, I don't know why, but the Russian Jewish intelligentsia was a phenomenon. And then was that man I told you about, Fyodor Akhmedevich.
Yes.
With him I felt absolutely at ease. He was pure son,
yes.
The Russian Jewish intellectual from Riga.
Yes.
But he only talked to the Jewish wine, but he talked entirely about Russian books, Russian music.
Yes.
Russian politics.
Yes.
About socialism, about preaching socialism to bearded work, sort of bearded workmen sitting on logs outside Riga.
Yes.
That's purely 19th century Russian left-wing phenomenon.
Yes. Do you feel increasingly marooned in time? You're not
you don't strike
me as being a lonely man, but might be the case that you have fewer and fewer around who understand exactly where you come from.
I would like to be with the Russian intelligentsia.
Mm.
And the thing which struck me, and in a way it was for you and me too, these new people all come out.
Mm.
Naiman,
yeah.
Brodsky,
yeah.
Tomaszewski, who I met, Imal Ivanov,
yeah.
Who is this man of genius, who I met in Oxford,
mm.
with a
I don't know Ivanov.
He's a linguist. He's called Koma Ivanov.
Mm-hmm.
His name is called Vladislav.
Mm-hmm.
His father was a novelist called Vladislav Ivanov.
Yes.
Vladislav Vladislavovich.
Yeah.
Technically, he's a linguist, and Brodsky says he's the most marvelous man in Russia.
Mm-hmm.
He came from Nottingham, he's a friend of Akhmatov, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And I met him in Oxford. It's obvious that he's a wonderful man.
Mm-hmm.
And I've read a piece by him on the thing called My Life's. My Sister Life,
yes.
Was one of the early
lectures of Pasternak,
which was better, more sensitive, profounder, more nobly written than any English critic or American critic could write now, but anything.
Really?
Yeah. He's an essayist, but mainly he's a linguist,
yeah.
And he made inventions, discoveries. I mean, Jacobson made a member of the British Academy, which I did.
Yes.
That's all he remembers, worldwide fame.
Yes.
But when I met him in Oxford. The only thing he told me, he talked about his life a bit and about writers and so on, told me what I didn't know before, that Stalin, and there were documents now found about a separate piece of Hitler that Stalin drew up in 1941. On the drone near Moscow, you see.
Oh my God.
That does exist.
And Ivanov told you that.
He said lots of people know. I mean, he said his father told him then. His father was a famous novelist, not terribly good. Born in Central Asia.
Yes, that's right.
Who I think was in some kind of rather in some kind of political circles to do with the Kremlin.
Mm.
I met him, a father in India. We were both attended the Tagore Congress, I do know about it. Why not?
You may have. No, you should tell me.
Oh, I must. Is your instrument on?
Oh, it's always on. Do you mind if I get myself something to drink or offer you something?
Well, I would like to offer something.
You like
get yourself anything you like. You want elk?
No, I don't want any elk, but there's some roses, lime juice, and water. That'd there's some Schweppes. There's some
I'll tell you.
Tomato juice.
Lime juice would be wonderful.
Okay.
What would you like for yourself?
I will pour something. Keep talking. Raconte.
Wait a bit, yes.
Tagore.
Tagore. And there's two tumblers, are there?
Yes.
Or any one?
No, there's plenty of tumblers.
What are you drinking?
I will have the same.
There is ice. There may be not in the ice box. Let's have a look at that ice. Ice object. Is there ice in it?
No, it's expired.
Well, I can tell you where it is. If you go, I'm not using you like a servant, a terrible thing to do. If you would go into the kitchen, which is opposite this room,
yes.
And open the fridge, you'll find the usual cubes in the upper part of it. I think ice grows nice today.
Hang on.
Oxford. Thank you. It's like all... When I was at Oxford, I had an Indian friend called Humayun Zahiruddin Amir Kabir, Muslim from Bengal. He was an undergraduate at my time, and we knew each other. You didn't speak, and so on, which I was not. But he wrote poetry. And so he made friends with me, and he wrote some Bengali poems which he wanted translated, which he translated into English, and I was consulted by him about the prosody. I'm telling you this story along. And the lines were as follows. I can't bear not to repeat them to you. Pale and discolored, wan and bloodless, rose the moon. So I said, all the editors meant the same thing. And he too, because he dropped his prophet. 3 lines later, I said, ho, he sang out across the waters. I said, sang out is perhaps serious, but maybe flung out. But the next line, which is 4 lines, it really pleased me. It said, throttled sorrow embottled in my heart. I didn't drop an internal rhyme, sentiment is clear. I didn't know what to do with that. So I said, look, you're a foreigner, you're not English, nor am I. Embottled doesn't exist. So a dictionary is produced, and embottled doesn't exist, obviously. And they said, very well, in that case, which do you prefer? Throttled sorrow bottled in my heart, or bottled sorrow throttled in my heart?
So sweet.
I can't remember what the final decision was. It was published by Blackwell's. Then he disappeared from my life, went to Calcutta as a professor of philosophy or something. Then he became, when I met him in Boston, Harvard, he was on a traveling after the war on a Ford Foundation scholarship with him.
Yeah.
You imagine, sort of favored Indian.
Yeah.
We embraced each other fondly. Then he became Minister of Education in the Nehru's government. Mm-hmm. There was not many Muslims, you see, in the Indian government. He was a socialist, for all his wanted. And then he became minister of something else. Finally, he wrote me a letter saying he was editing Tagore's prose works. Could I look at some of these pieces and tell him which I thought was the best? We weren't allowed to pursue the Indians in 1957.
Yeah.
So I said yes. Bales of jute began to arrive containing Tagore's works. He must have written 5 million words in life. He also wrote, I think. Painted 200 pictures and wrote 35 operas. Anyway, I had a lecture at Oxford. Very beautiful man. Very boring too. Then, I said, you know, article number 135 is a lecture, number 47 is letter number 200 seemed quite good. Something like that. The only other two people consulted, the only other Oxford contemporaries he knew. That was Lord Hailsham and a Canadian ambassador in Bonn was a man called Escott Reed.
Yes, absolutely.
He was Oxford with us.
Yes,
I didn't know him, but Kabir did. We were exactly the same age. If alive, he's 80.
Yes.
So I'm very nervous. And that was it. And I had no our opinions of printed in the back of a book. So it's a copy. Then, and 100th anniversary occurred. He must have been born in 1870. So then I received a letter from the British High Commissioner in Delhi, whom I knew, called a friend of mine in Washington, called Gore Booth, who later became head of the Foreign Office. Saying that would I come, as I wanted through to go, white Tagore experts in the world. The three persons who represent the English-speaking peoples were Aldous Huxley, who was a Hindu practically, Michael Untermeyer, who was an American poet.
Louis Untermeyer,
yes, who was an anthologist, mainly. Me. Because, so I said, I was very sorry, I was a professor of lecturing, and I was afraid that October, November was impossible. I couldn't just go away. I then received a letter from the Indian Light Mission in London, making the same request. I sent a copy of my letter to the British High Commissioner. I then received a letter from Kabir himself, saying the marvelous idea, that please come. So I'm already sent copies of these letters. I then received a letter from the head of the Commonwealth Affairs Office, Sir Garner Savile, saying, Mr. Kabir is very, very, very anxious to come. We wish to be on good terms with him. It's very important to us, and so on. Can you realize it? Impossible. Virtuously. Then, they said, if you can't come, would you nominate somebody else? So I said, I was sure that Mr. Stephen Spendow, Miss Veronica Wedgwood, were only too pleased to go.
Yeah.
Veronica accepted. Then fell ill. Then I received a letter from the Vice Chancellor saying, would I represent Oxford University and the British Academy? Oh, well, if I was being pushed to the university, I could discontinue the lectures of straight order. Delighted. Went to Zaleen, stayed with the Gore Booth, and attended the Kabir Conference, the
Tagore
Conference. The bad anti-British was.
Really?
By that I mean.
Yeah.
Particularly people from Sri Lanka. Mm. And then all the sucks appeared, and I made friends with him, it was very nice. Then, the wonderful event occurred. The Congress of Cultural Freedom, which was then, it's respectable,
yeah,
for the scandal,
yeah,
gave a reception to which they expected 80, 90 people to come. Because of Aldous Huxley, 1,000 Indian students appeared. We stood in a row in front of them, and I looked at them, I said, I can tell you what this reminds me of, execution, is it? Now they're like Maximilian,
yes,
being executed,
yes, yes,
money's picture.
Yes.
Then an Indian spoke up, nobody spoke. Mr. Aldous Huxley, after the late Mr. Gandhi, the Taj Mahal is the most prized possession of the Indian people. Yet, in your book, Jesting Pilate, you said it was an ugly building with towers like funnels. Will you kindly repeat that sentiment? Poor old Huxley said, well, when I was a young man, I was staying with the father of your Prime Minister, Mr. Motilal. I'm sure I've changed my mind. I'm going to Accra. I'll see it again. Very well, said the Indian. We hope you will change your mind. That was about all. Yes. And I traveled with Huxley too, learning to look at Taj Mahal with two mouths.
Yeah. And did he change his mind?
He said he did.
What was he like?
Gentle, sweet, serious, humorless.
Humorless.
Yeah, rather. Very nice old, sweet old man. Talking very slowly.
Pleased with his enormous fame?
I don't think particularly. Man modest. And interested in Hindu things. More than believed in Hinduism. He was a bit bored, I must say. He said, these Indians are very exhausting. You know. They had to write in books, what do you think of this, these 200 pages? He said, I find them interesting. Hey, Huxley. The operas couldn't be induced to go to. I went to one.
Yeah. What were they like?
Awful. Well, I hate Indian music anyway.
Really?
Didn't like it.
And is that true of all non-Western music?
Don't know any other. No, I heard Chinese orchestra perform in Canberra. Certainly, when the Prime Minister was there, what's the name, you know, the left-wing Prime Minister they had?
Gough Whitlam.
Whitlam, you see, on very good terms with China. Then.
Yes.
So they sent off Shanghai Symphony Orchestra. They played the old instruments.
Oh, really?
They played traditional Chinese music. It was very remarkable. And it's beautiful with the rhythms. Interesting that the instruments were, and they were absolutely mechanical. They all got up and smiled and frowned the same moment. Absolutely different, isn't it? Volume versions. And then they played the something of a revolutionary concerto, which I think is a feeble Russian work written by somebody or other.
Yeah.
Kind of sort of dozen off of water. And then they played Waltzing Matilda.
Untraditional Chinese instruments. Wonderful.
Yes. mit Malte Rose.
You really have had a very wide musical experience, and that would come at the farther end of the spectrum.
Exactly. Does. Why am I talking about Tagore?
I don't know. I can't remember. This is a case where the 1001 Nights has sort of lost itself.
Exactly. Tagore.
Doesn't matter.
India. Nothing with India.
We'll think of something.
Oh,
yes, these are
Ivanov.
Ivanov. You meet Ivanov at Tagore.
The father of the Our Lord.
Yes.
I met in India.
Yeah.
The Tagore conference.
Yeah.
And we got on very well, and I translated for him in an Indian temple, which he addressed in Russian. And I translated into English. We got on beautifully. When he came back to Moscow, he wrote an official report and said, meeting a representative of the British Empire called Berlin was exceedingly sinister.
Oh, really?
Yes.
How do you know that?
Well, I read it.
Really?
It's printed.
Oh, really? In the...
Some Russian.
In the document.
Somebody sent me. Tell you what the name sent me. My friend in India.
All right.
You see? Right. I told him. I didn't tell the son, I thought. No. I did, yes. You're a little shaken. So, never mind. His father had to say it.
Now, tell me about these... You were about to say something I thought interesting about this generation of Russians. And your relationship.
I must tell you, I ignored not that much. I suddenly realized what I didn't know before. I thought the intelligentsia was more destroyed, or if you will, librarians sitting about, or old ladies, like Tchaikovsky's daughter, his lady.
Yes.
Not at all. They exist quite young. All these Nymans and company, those of their own collection.
Yes.
Some of are sort of very Soviet. That is, very Solzhenitsyn, with a Soviet man.
Absolutely.
Doesn't belong to anything at all.
And that's his problem.
Yes, it is. But these people are exactly as they were. Mm. They could easily be in Petrograd, I'm sure, in 1910.
Brodsky too?
Even Brodsky. Mm. There could have been a young poet.
Like him.
Like the Dutty kind.
Yeah.
There was Koma Ivanov. Everyone called him that because you know why. Because it looks like there's a lump, what it means. There was, somebody told me, I can't remember, there was a Jewish journalist called Melach, about whom Madame, I was there to say to you, Madame Dabashevska, he said, Neymar is a trivial character, but Melach is the evil, wicked man, liberate.
Yeah.
They all hissed against each other at some extent.
Yes.
I think Melach is perhaps rather terrible.
And that's an aspect of the Russian intelligentsia or that kind of milieu that I always find terribly hard to take. I suppose it's an effect of oppression in the sense that they're all kind of forced in upon each other. They live a very kind of isolated and...
But whom do you meet about
Brodsky? But you then get a kind of frightful sort of incestuous, backbiting, rumor-filled kind of milieu, it seemed to me.
That is true. And
but not just in the intelligentsia, I mean... Among party hacks in Moscow, the same kind of slightly fetid, secretive, nasty air.
But among the intelligentsia, I think they just say malicious things about each other, but Neymar is not a member of the Writers' Union. None of them are.
Yeah.
None of these people.
Yes.
They form a small group. But what I mean, the mere fact that these seeds, which were left by their parents, grew into these same plants.
It's rather touching.
It's remarkable, too.
Yes.
No, more than touching. Mm. I think it means there's going to be a Russian culture of proper kind. Mm. Perhaps not in my time, but certainly in yours.
Yes.
You see, there's going to be a perfectly good, sort of real artistic and literary culture superior to that of the West.
Yes.
I'm certainly talking like a Russian chauvinist.
Yes.
It doesn't exist
now. Why superior to the West?
What?
Why superior?
Because I suddenly realize that what these people write is more authentic.
Yes.
It's less... clever, it's less smart, it's less conventional in a way.
Yeah.
I mean, we have no great writers in the West. All we have is rather skillful writers. Mm. That's about all we can say. Mm. The number of people but who have some kind of moral weight as writers is not great. Mm. I don't know who we can say that. And Graham Greene obviously thinks he is. Mm. But on all the ordinary novels and poems which appear, now that Auden is dead, nothing much. Maybe Larkin is the last in a way. Of that sort. Whereas in Russia there is something absolutely fresh, totally unexhausted. Mm-hmm. You see, there is, I mean, the horrible Steiner did say that, you know, better literature is written in Eastern Europe, because under oppression, it says, suffering leads to
marvelous art. He would say that, wouldn't he? Yeah.
Well, that isn't true, it's not the oppression. But it does preserve people from commercialization.
Yes.
There's no pornography in Russia, ordinary kind.
Yeah.
We don't get sex shops.
Yeah.
And that did mean they were driven in on themselves, inner emigration.
Yeah.
Inner emigration, the inner emigration of people who did not cooperate with the state, were not approved of by the regime, who eked out difficult lives by some kind of non-corrupt, non-treacherous, non-treasonable literature that people did not sell themselves to the party of the state.
Yes.
These people preserved. They knew each other, they knew who the others were, they knew who to trust, who not to trust.
Mm.
It's an absolutely genuine group.
Yes.
And they will spread.
Yes.
They will get up out.
Yes.
Under these conditions, under glasses, however bogus it may seem
to
be.
They will.
Of course they are allowed to do what they like. Now that you have conceptualists who have written maddest possible surrealist prose.
Yes.
See what I mean? It's pretty dreadful, but it's free.
Yes.
It's free.
Yes.
It's rather like Italian films after the war. The marvelous.
Yes.
Sudden great heartbreak of, yes, yeah, artistic of talent.
Yeah.
These are the wonderful early Italian films.
Yeah.
Even German films, up to a point.
Well, I hope you're right, because what I've seen of the Soviet art and avant-garde in the early Gorbachev years leads me to think that precisely the problem is that they're cut off from any usable past. And so a lot of what you get in the artistic is a kind of frantic imitation of the West in the worst kind. It would be very encouraging if what you're saying is right, that they can reach back across the veil.
The people are preserved somewhere. People who somehow were hidden by their parents, by their somehow realized that all this is no good.
Yes.
It was deeply anti. So it was deeply anti-state.
Yes.
And we rather sort of hid in corners and saw each other with difficulty.
Yeah.
I mean, Pasternak is not touched. Like, so in spite of Zhivago expressing some kind of communist dreams,
yeah,
towards the end, he really belonged to the pre-war generation.
Yeah.
He's Russian, he's ex, he's living.
Yeah.
It's like the two sisters in Oxford have no relationship to Soviet life.
Yeah.
So they may think they, you see, they may be pro-communist, and pro-anything,
yes,
but they're not of the type.
Yes.
You see, and the same is true when I talk to these people, I find it, talking to them as a certain, to me, absolutely natural. I can talk without difficulty.
Mm-hmm.
Much more so than if I was sitting in the theater with English writers.
Mm-hmm.
English novelists would like to show off or talk in some special way, or have something to do with TLS on the anti it or pro it. You know what I mean? Or you know perfectly well the world I mean.
Yes, oh God. Can I put some of this on some?
Who did you have with you in Paris? I saw the program.
Elliot Abrams.
Yes, who was son of Abrams, is he?
No.
Who is Elliot Abrams?
Abrams.
Oh, yes, the American Secretary of State.
Yes, frightful.
Under Secretary of
absolutely
State.
Absolutely frightful.
Oh, Nicaragua,
kind
yes.
Kind of a sub-Metternichian kind of counter-revolutionary.
Yes.
Very certainly sinister character.
Yes, yes.
And then some other people. Can I put some
who
of this on?
Who are people? Wait.
Oh,
Who are left?
A range of. Slightly secondary.
We have four people.
I wanted to get Eric Hobsbawm, but he wouldn't appear with Elliot Abrams.
Is he?
Or so he told me.
But who are the others there?
Hilda Bernstein, the South African.
She talked fanatic. I mean, it was too boring.
Yeah.
Once you made us.
But she was representative of a certain tradition.
Oh, yes, in
to
South
me.
Africa.
Oh, yeah.
No, that Jewish revolution is anywhere.
Yeah.
But what I mean is, she went on and on and on.
Oh, it was
mechanical.
Yes, it was.
I mean,
yes.
I mean,
well,
we're not using violence, they are. They use violence against us.
Yes,
what do you expect us to do?
No, she was the thing itself, though. That's what I would
state
say.
State terrorism by Africa, well.
Yes.
So we can't, we have exactly what the PLO say.
Yes.
Exactly the same line.
Yes.
Then who else do we have?
And then,
the type,
and then a Pole. A Polish German.
She was awfully tedious. No idea. What, a Pole?
A Pole.
Who was excellent.
Yes,
much
good.
Best.
Yes, rather quiet and
but father, and moderate and
yes,
sensible.
Yes.
Father best.
And then a Welsh windbag historian, who I thought was terrible.
Speaking of awful. Why did you have him?
Well, I thought it was a mistake. I would have much preferred Eric Cobsbawm.
No, there was something on lefties. Yeah. But who recommended him? Where did you fetch him?
This was a bad example of me coming in. I'd refused to do it twice, and I did it at the last minute.
And you got to whoever was going. And where did you find this man?
He's at Warwick. He teaches at Warwick.
Well, I know, but I mean, the facts are given to one to look at without being overinterpreted. Mm-hmm. So, like, and I don't know, the bits of literature, whatever he's brought in, is highly relevant. Not too many quotations. Distract one. And a portrait is produced. I don't know, you would suddenly feel that you really could be in a room with this. That's the thing. Mm-hmm. You know what he would say? After I read a biography of Karl Marx like that, it isn't a particularly good book, it's mainly about ideas. Still, I thought I knew what Marx would look like. He liked it years ago.
Oh, I think that's one of the best things about that book. I think it's terribly good.
In some sense, you see, what he would look like. I didn't like him at all. Yes. It was awful. But I knew what he would look like. He would sit in his chair, what he would say, kind of things he would say.
Yes. Hmm. It's very vivid.
That is what I think is. I tried to do that anyway.
I absolutely take the point about amateur psychologizing. That I do take.
I'm sure you don't like it either. It's irritating when that happens.
Well, I don't like it for one obvious reason, which is who the hell knows, is what it comes down to.
Well, and Freudian speculations and relations of mother and father, things not meaning what they appear to mean, and not being what they appear to be, and really symbolic of something else.
I don't play that game.
Well, I mean, I
I don't play that game, and I also don't want to drown the reader in paper. I mean, it seems to me that I have a major problem in thinking about
choosing all the bits of my life. Yeah, there's a lot of separate
bits.
There's
a huge
mosaic.
Yes, there's a very large mosaic. You know an enormous range of people. It's a project in which one could disappear without a trace, and I think part of the strategy that I have to find is
I give a list of my enemies, didn't I?
No.
I can.
Oh, give me a list of your enemies. I'd love a list of your enemies. And then I really must go.
Okay, do you want
list of enemies.
Is this recording?
It's recording.
Well, look. List of my enemies from the beginning. My enemies are people who attack me in public, roughly. Not people I privately disliked. I didn't mean that. No. But still, enemies. Now, did I have any enemies at school? No. None that I knew.
Right.
Did I have enemies in undergraduate? One or two, but I mean, non-trivial and all that.
Yeah.
Then, went on. People didn't care for me, yet, so that's not the same. Mm-hmm. Not people would take the trouble to do me damage, which is what the enemies do.
Yes.
I think hostile views I regard as signs of enmity, because they're really personal.
Yes.
The first nasty review I got was for Karl Marx, from a man called Raymond Prescott, was Kohl's brother-in-law, who was an ex-communist and socialist.
Yes.
And that really was an attempt to destroy the book utterly. I never thought it was a really good book, but this I did mind. I might have been bad reviews. Personally, I'd rather not be reviewed at all. Thus, I just wanted my name mentioned in public at all.
Yes.
I didn't like seeing it in newspapers anyway.
Yes.
Even for praise, is a nuclear.
Yes.
Neurotic symptom of some sort.
Yes.
Desire for concealment, security, all these dreary vices. Now, then I had a singularly nasty review of a mad kind by a man called McGee, and not McGee, no, Robert Key,
who
writes about Ireland,
yes.
who produced an article in something called Picture Post, a long gone 1947 year, in which really it was a personal attack. He came to, I don't know, interview various Oxford dons. He more or less said, there is this fat, awful man. I'm not really sitting in the room, some complacent and sort of greasy. And,
yeah.
I mean, it really was a very valid truth that he personally introduced him to me and did write to him saying, you shouldn't have said all that. But he then wrote me a letter of apology at some point. really tried to commit suicide, I think, but didn't really. Married for 5 or 6 wives, very handsome. And we've met him since. And he says to me, do you still feel whatever it is? I never accused him of anything, I never. I said, well, prison is there, it's a wound. It's still there, I said. I always hope it would be. But I'm afraid on introspecting, I find it's there. That's what I replied. Because I'm sort of in bed by night.
Yes.
Sometimes smart.
Yes.
I wish it wasn't. I mean, I'm always hoping it's gone.
Yes.
It hasn't gone, is it? Yes. It's quite funny. He's very, very polite.
Yes.
There's the drop of tea. Then there's a man called Marshall Cohen, who's head of the philosophy department at UCLA.
Yes.
Who wrote the attack on me in some philosophical periodical saying, who is this man who is here and so on, Sir Isaiah Berlin, and why is he a knight?
Yes.
What do people find this?
Yes.
This awful inaugural act.
Yes.
It's about 2 kinds of liberty.
Yes.
But of a personal attack. That's all I mind, really. I'm abusive.
Yes.
Words abuse me. Man's name I've forgotten, called Green, I think, who wrote a book called Children of the Sun, which is a book of literary pornography. Not in that book, but some article. Who is the preferred, bemedaled figure? It's right to take him down a peg or three, that kind of thing.
Yes, yes.
Just a Cold War figure and nothing else.
Yes.
That was that written down, isn't it? What's all the nonsense?
Yes.
So, then there's now these are not serious. There's somebody in the journal called Salmagundi.
Yeah.
I think his name is Meyer, perhaps he's a sort of Marxist. Mm-hmm. How boring, how predictable, how dreary, how empty, how superficial, how no good at all. That sort of thing.
Yeah.
People give my defense vaguely. And who else? Who else that thought? Deutscher. Reviewed me in the Observer in a very hostile version. That is historically the inevitability which you can't elect.
Yeah.
In Deutsch. So, various Marxists.
But not really. Carr?
Yes, well, Carr had a controversy.
Yeah.
Carr attacked me for my views, but not personally.
Yeah.
I mean, I replied. What happened was that I delivered, he attacked me, used to attack me at TLS, anonymously, a bit.
Yeah.
Then, over the radio somehow. The article had been in the listener. Letters of some sort, I don't know. He must have written an article which attacked me. And I replied. And I accused him of saying things which weren't true. He replied and saying they weren't true. It was too late to change him now.
Yeah.
He was in the press.
Yeah.
So he was ideologically very bad and rude, and, but not personally at all.
Yeah.
We continued on quite good terms.
Yeah.
I know. Many reviewers, I suppose. People say nice things about me now.
Personal enemies.
Yes, I have them. I think perhaps that there are people called souls who don't like me very much. Not enemies, quite. I've never known them. Possibly take steps to do anything against me, as I know. I'm trying to think, I've forgotten them, I think.
I sensed a real bitterness in you about the way All Souls has gone down, however.
That's true.
Which might lead you to feel that
no.
Not enemies, but people who really...
They become mediocrities.
Yeah.
They're not personal enemies. Though.
Right.
Well, I suppose scrutiny in this regard is not exactly friendly.
Yes.
That could be said.
Yeah.
I shouldn't say very much. I haven't really exposed myself greatly. In society, who detests me. There are such people.
True.
Can't think of anyone. This is awful. This is against me. I don't have enough enemies.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. I would have thought having enemies is much less of a problem than having friends who disapprove of you.
Oh, that's very frequent. Mm. Almost all of them do. Mm. One way or another.
Yes.
Some kind of complacency, cowardice,
yes,
sitting on the fence.
Yes.
Not because they're all that certain. Well, I think almost every friend I have disapproves of me. I'm rather like a person about whom somebody said he has no enemies, but his friends don't like you very much. That's quite just.
That's simply untrue.
I know it's untrue. Stuart Hampshire disapproves of me. Mm. Very fond of me.
Yes.
Great friend, but disapproves. Mm. Herbert Hart used to disapprove of me for being reactionary.
Yes.
No,
Judith Hart as well, probably.
What?
Judith Hart as well, probably.
Yes. Used to. Jennifer.
Jennifer, yes.
Used to. Rather come around.
Yes.
Originally, I talk nonsense. But she's fond of, sufficiently fond of me not. No, she doesn't really disapprove me. Doesn't care that lip. Let me see who else. Bob Silver does not disapprove of me. Haskell didn't disapprove of me. Either of them.
No.
No. Alfred only thinks I'm very idle, lazy, don't write down what I order. Mm. Don't do the work like code, that sort of thing.
Yes.
No more than that.
Yes.
Freddie Hare disapproved of me.
Mm. And he is no more.
He's no more. He friend away, but mm. You see. Humphrey House was a famous critic.
Yes.
Great friend. Disapproved very strongly.
Why?
I suppose not being left-wing enough, really. Mm. Being in with the wrong people, promiscuous taste, being in the wrong company. Donald MacLean detested me.
Yes.
The late.
Yes, the late. The unlamented.
Guy Birch was quite fond of me.
Yes.
Donald MacLean did hate me.
Yes.
I had the row with him.
Remember, you're telling me about Henry Wallace.
He really disliked me.
Yes.
He really disliked me very much. Wait a moment. He didn't love me. Weidenfeld, very ambivalent.
Why?
Because I'm ambivalent about him, no doubt. I could explain that.
Yes.
I could explain, but I mean, love me to go next in terms of him.
Yes.
He thinks maybe I am. Now.
Yes.
For a long time. Rightly suspicious of my attitude towards him.
Yes.
Maurice Bauer, I was an acquired taste of. He was envious of me.
Mm.
And that is one of the things which you will feel about me. I'm a victim of envy.
Yes.
I've had too easy a life.
Yes.
I've done too well and too little. Mm. You see what I mean?
Yes.
The, not people like, but I don't know, people like, I think people like the late Dr. Scholem thought that about me.
Mm.
Well, why am I known at all? What have I really done?
Yes.
What is the value of it all? My capital is too small. It's, it's making things go very long way, that's what's felt.
Yes.
I've been too well off, too popular, too quite well liked, and after all, when it comes to brass tacks, what have I produced? What am I?
Yes.
What is my contribution? What,
yes,
what about it?
Yes.
You see? That sort of thing. I'm trying to think who. Momigliano felt that a little about me. Mm-hmm. The great Italian scholar, though.
Yes.
He was very fond of me and I was a great friend.
Mm.
But the general idea is, why all this? What do you think is any good that he's done?
Yes.
I mean, he hasn't really done very much. He's pretty idle in his life. He's enjoyed himself a great deal. That's all the fuss about.
Yes.
His dispatches in Washington, now that we can read some of them, are boring beyond words. What's the great legend about? Famous American legend about my dispatch was all absolute nonsense. Emperor's new clothes.
Yes.
So I am a victim of envy.
Yes.
Yeah. That I am. Mm. Roy Harrod is in the alone.
Yeah.
In that way. And to see my scones like me, I don't know that I've ever known many.
Let's stop there as I have to go.